The name of the sermon today is Satisfaction. Satisfaction. S-A-T-I-S-F-A-C-T-I-O-N. Satisfaction. Today is the Day of Atonement. Here is what it says in Leviticus 23, verse 27. Leviticus 23 and verse 27. Also on the 10th day of this month, there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and you shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. On a day in which we are afflicting our souls, why would I give this sermon the title of Satisfaction? Well, let us begin with a definition of the word. Satisfaction is a noun. Number one, an act of satisfying, fulfillment, gratification. Two, the state of being satisfied, contentment. Three, the cause or means of being satisfied. Four, confident acceptance of something as satisfactory, dependable, true. Five, reparation or compensation as for a wrong or injury. Six, the opportunity to redress or right a wrong. And seven, payment or discharge as of a debt or obligation. Do any of these definitions fit the Day of Atonement? Where is the satisfaction? Where is the fulfillment? Can anyone point out the reparation for a wrong? Let's see if we can find any, as I encourage all of us to see and rejoice in the satisfaction of this day. Let us read from our doctrine on the holy days. Day of Atonement, the 10th day of the 7th month, had quite an elaborate ritual in the Old Testament times and continued up to the destruction of the temple. It was a commanded fast day in which nothing could be eaten or drunk for 24 hours. From the evening of the 9th to the evening of the 10th, on the day itself, the ritual of the two goats was enacted as described in detail in Leviticus 16. Two goats were selected by drawing lots. One was chosen to represent God and the other to represent the Azazel. In later literature, Azazel was considered a name for the chief of demons, i.e. another name for Satan. The high priest first sacrificed a bull for himself and entered into the Holy of Holies to sprinkle the blood on the mercy seat. Then he slaughtered the goat for the Lord and sprinkled its blood on the mercy seat, as he had done the blood of the bull. In this way, the high priest was the only person to ever go into the Holy of Holies, and then only on the Day of Atonement. At all other times and to all other people, it was off limits. The goat for Azazel then had the sins of the people confessed over it by the high priest. After that, it was taken away live into the wilderness and turned loose, symbolically removing all of the transgressions of the people from the camp. Thus, the Day of Atonement symbolized the reconciliation of the Israelites to God. If you look at the word atonement and break it out into three words, it is at one ment. So we are at a time, and what this day represents is the putting away of Satan, and we are at full at one ment with God. And so this is a day we look forward to with a certain amount of, and a lot on my, at least on in my mind, of satisfaction. This will be a day of satisfaction when he's finally put away. Now, when he is finally put away, we will be spirit beings, so we'll have a lot to be satisfied about. We can easily see definitions 5 through 7 here. The Day of Atonement is the reparation for a wrong, an injury of Satan and sin being in the world. So we're being injured by Satan. I was just talking about that and getting prepared for the feast. And a reparation of a wrong. This act of God of placing the sins upon Satan is his opportunity, God's opportunity to right the wrong. clearly the Day of Atonement is the discharge of a debt. Let us read on. The Day of Atonement, a solemn day of fasting and self-searching, represents the time when sin shall be placed upon the head of the ultimate source, Satan the devil, the removal of the cause of evil, showing God's kingdom to hold unopposed rulership over mankind. That's why I picked that picture that you saw for. I like to pick a picture to represent the sermon, and you see a guy in contemplation down by the body of water there. And that's the self-searching. And when you do a self-searching, like on a Day of Atonement, so as it says here, a solemn day of fasting and self-searching, out of that will come the satisfaction, because you realize the heavy impact of what God is doing in the plan. Talk about the state of being satisfied, definition 2, an act of gratification, definition 1, and the cause or means of being satisfied, definition 3, this is it. Let us continue in the doctrine on the holy days from the booklet, God's Seasonal Plan. Begin quote. Then comes the only commanded fast day of the year, the solemn day of atonement. God said, also on the 10th day of the 7th month there shall be an atonement. It shall be a holy convocation, meaning a commanded assembly, unto you, and you shall afflict your souls, your lives, Leviticus 23:27, in a solemn ceremony on this day of fasting, when God commanded Israel not to eat or drink from sundown of the previous day until sundown on atonement. The high priest enacts a fascinating meaning-laden ritual. Study Leviticus, the 16th chapter, to understand all of the types. The two goats were to be presented. One was for the eternal, and the other was the Azazel, erroneously called a scapegoat. The Azazel goat was to have all of the sins of Israel symbolically placed on its head, and then it was to be led by the hands of a fit man who would not allow the goat to turn back into... He couldn't turn back, and he took him into the distant wilderness where he would be released. One goat was sacrificed, symbolizing the atonement for sin, a shadow of Christ's impending sacrifice. The other was to be allowed to wander in the wilderness, bearing figuratively the sins of Israel upon it, Leviticus 16:21. I see satisfaction in that. And all through the text, you're going to see where I put the word satisfaction, because statements are being made that bring great satisfaction. Only once in the year was Aaron and the high priest to follow him through the centuries to enter into, the high priest after Aaron, through the centuries to enter into the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle, later the temple. The 9th chapter of Hebrews explains the deep meaning of the ritual. Paul wrote in part, but into the second, the Holy of Holies, with the high priest alone, once every year, not without blood, which he offered for himself and for the heirs of the people. The Holy Spirit, this signifying that the way into the holiest type of heaven and God's presence was not yet made manifest, while as yet the first tabernacle was yet standing, but Christ being come a high priest of good things to come by a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this building. So there's satisfaction there. Neither by blood of goats or calves, but by his own blood, he entered once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us, Hebrews 9:7-12. Satisfaction. The sacrifice on the Day of Atonement was extremely elaborate. The priest had to carefully wash and dress and to sacrifice an animal for his own sins, and had to sprinkle blood upon the book and the people, Hebrews 9:19. In this elaborate ritual accomplished on the day of fasting, one sees the terrible consequences of sin. God has decreed that the penalty for sin is death, Romans 6:23, yet he sent his Son, Jesus Christ, as the Lamb of God to die for the sins of you and me and all mankind, to atone for sin, so that those who call upon Christ are symbolically covered by his shed blood, their sins forgiven. And I would think sins forgiven makes for satisfaction. To be sure, the ancient ceremony of atonement was a bloody one. Now, see the whole picture. The high priest was a type of Christ entering through the veil that separated the outer holy place from the Holy of Holies, a type of heaven itself. The veil in the temple split when the miraculous earthquake struck at the moment of Christ's death, signifying that Christ's death had made it possible for mankind to have direct access to God the Father through Christ. And again, I say, satisfaction. The Azazel goat is not a type of Christ, but a type of Satan. Notice, and I saw the angel come down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit, the abyss, we see in Jude 13, and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil, and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. Revelation 20, 1 through 12. And when he gets put into that place where he is bound, there will be great satisfaction, whether there are humans around, which there will be, and us as spirit beings. The angel was pictured by a fit man selected to take the goat over whose head the sins of Israel were confessed into a trackless wilderness and there release it alive. Thus, God shows we have all had a partner in sin. This goat is not a scapegoat, for God places guilt where guilt squarely belongs. The Hebrew word Azazel comes from the word meaning fierce, mighty, rough, or strong, such as a rough goat. It means literally a rough goat that is sent out. So that had to be a really interesting ritual to see. Thus, the detailed ceremony of the Day of Atonement shows the necessity of Christ's sacrifice to atone for sins, shows how his death opened the way into God's presence in heaven itself, shows how Satan will finally be bound, unable to deceive the nations anymore. And there is satisfaction. Paul wrote, moreover, that he sprinkled with blood both the tabernacle and all the vessels of the ministry, and almost all things are by the law purged with blood, and without shedding of blood there is no remission. It was therefore necessary that the patterns of things in the heavens should be purified with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ is not entered into the holy place made with hands, which are the figures or types and pictures of the true, but into heaven itself. So all this mention of heaven is Christ returning from the resurrection into heaven. And it says, heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ is not entered into the holy place made with hands, which are the figures, types, and pictures, I'm repeating here, of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. Satisfaction. Nor yet that he should offer himself often, as the high priest entered into the holy place every year on the Day of Atonement with blood of others, but now, once in the end of the world, or the end of the age, hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Hebrews 9, 21 through 28, and therein is satisfaction. Do you see how these rich New Testament truths are pictured so ceremoniously, so richly, and in such detail by the accompanying rituals of the annual holy days? End quote. Now from our doctrine on the law, the New Testament makes it clear that sin brings on the death penalty, Romans 6:23, and sin is the transgression of the law, 1 John 3:4. Since all have sinned and thus failed to keep the law perfectly, Romans 3:23, all have brought the death penalty upon themselves. Only the giving up of human life will satisfy this penalty. Thus, the sacrifice of the Creator, of God Himself, in the person of Jesus Christ is the only means by which the penalty can be paid and therefore removed from all humanity. Satisfaction. No one apart from Jesus has kept the law perfectly. All have incurred the death penalty. This made the death of sinless Jesus, the Son of God, a necessity. Recognition of Christ's freely given sacrifice not only brings home the sober reality of sin, but it also enables us to see what true love is at first hand, John 3:16. And therein is satisfaction. Up to this point, a couple of things entered my mind. One is we're fasting on this day, and it said earlier in the text that sin is the reason that we're fasting is because of the sin, and the fact that the sin is taken away is the satisfying part. But we're seeing the sin, and I was thinking to myself, you know, when you are fasting, you can really feel it. And what is it you think you're feeling? And why is God having us fast on this day? He wants us to feel something, and in this case, about sin. And when I have this feeling of fasting, and I've been getting emails and texts from people saying that this is not the easiest day in the year, and people are tired, and they're having withdrawal symptoms. Some of you aren't getting your caffeine and so on, and having headaches from lack of food and everything. But the purpose of all that is to show what sin is. And so you see sin, you get a feeling for what sin is in that wilderness that we call the fasting. And another thing that it came out in the text here is without God, we're nothing. All these scriptures about, you know, we all come short of the glory of God, and we're all sinners and worthy of death. Well, when you think about that, and you think for a moment, like yesterday, I was being hit by all kinds of delays and troubles and tribulations and what wasn't a happy camper, but then I started thinking, you know, left to my own devices, I can't do any of this. And I think God likes us coming to that realization on a daily basis. Part of the reason we do assiduity, praying, putting everything into God's hands. But what wouldn't you want to put into God's hands on a daily basis? I want everything that happens this day to be in His hands. From you know, putting on my clothes to everything else I got to do, and especially you're going through a lot of different things. You know, getting ready for the feast is not a normal situation. You're having to go through a lot of processes you don't even do, you know, unless you're going on a trip. And so you got to find this, you got to pack that, and where's that luggage, and you go through all of these things, and then you're stuff is lost. You know, I'm missing at least three things there somewhere. And I mean, nothing earth-shaking missing, but I just wonder what that is. But you go through all of these things, and you come to the realization. A first fruit would always come to the realization, I can't do this by myself, and I need God all of the way. Now, from our doctrine on mankind and speaking to fulfillment. So this is our doctrine on mankind. Just one paragraph. Although the ultimate purpose of human life is to be fulfilled at the resurrection, God does not neglect the present physical life. That's why we put everything into God's hands. Indeed, the fulfillment, the abundance, the happiness, and the success of this human life are an integral part of God's plan. And what is it in that plan? That you put everything into His hands, and He'll take care of it. His will And by take care of it, I mean his will be carried out. So you may put everything into God's hands and maybe something isn't carried out the way you thought it was going to be carried out. The way it was carried out, God's will. All kinds of reasons for that. We could have long talks about how God takes care of all these things in your life. But ultimately, he is going to see to the fulfillment, abundance, happiness, and success in this human life. This from our doctrine on the law of God. Love is the fulfillment of the law. God is love. That is his nature and essence, 1 John 4:8. It is only from God that we can learn what real and perfect love is. A great deal depends upon the guidance of his Holy Spirit, but God's love is essentially expressed and taught through his law, Romans 13:10 and 1 John 5:3. It is the major vehicle by which his love has been made known to mankind. I'm being impacted by that statement. It is very true how this works. He gives us his law, and he does that in love. And, you know, giving of the law, it says it taught through the law. The law is the major vehicle by which his love has been made known to mankind. And we see that. We see it more often if we put everything into God's hands. And it just hit me. When you do put everything into God's hands, guess what you're going to find easier to do? Fulfill the law. Because if we were just going about our lives, you know, giving lip service to God and kind of relying on our own talents, which were God-given, by the way, but if we're just relying on that and not going through this very profound ritual of putting everything into God's hands, you might step away from the law. But when you put everything into God's hands, you're right there in the middle of the law. And by putting everything into God's hands, you're thinking about God all day long. And how can you think of God without what he says here, major vehicle by which his love is made known? And he's going to carry out your prayers, you're putting everything into his hands, by the law and by his love, which are the two are inseparable. Continuing, if we human beings had the love that God has, perfect, complete, limitless love, we would have no need for the external moral law, though we should still need God to reveal to us his Sabbath, holy day, spiritual meaning, ceremonial laws, etc. In other words, when you are keeping the law, you are above the law, because the law is a schoolmaster of God's will. And if you are carrying out God's will, the Bible speaks of it as you are now above the law, which means for that moment in time, you're above the law because you are fulfilling the law. So the law is pointing to something, is pointing to a fulfillment. And when you are carrying out the law of God, you are in all of the godly principles. All law points to godly principles. When you are manifesting all of those godly principles, you're above the law. Do we then do away with the law? No, because we're human. We're fallible human beings, which means it's possible for us to slip and sin. And then you need the law to throw you back up into godly principle. And that's what that is all about. If human beings had the full knowledge of love plus the full power to express that love that God has, there should be no need of external guidelines or codified statements or definitions or examples of any kind. We would always express love to its full extent. And you can't say that you're, because see, love is one of the principles that you're manifesting. And love entails all of the other principles. So you say, what are all the principles? Well, we have those posted, but if you took all of the principles of God, all of these things and put it into one box, it'd be love. And so if you are the embodiment of love, then you are carrying out all of the law automatically. So we are not God, it says, and we do not have the perfect love which is exemplified by him. Human beings must learn love. That's what we're doing in the salvation process. Christians must grow towards the absolute embodiment of which all fall so short. This is the purpose of God's law. Well, that's interesting, because you notice that this is called a process. You're in a process, which means time. Which means, and we've had this discussion many times, what were you like in the first year of your baptism? How are you now? Some of you have been around 50 years. How do you look at yourself now, since this is a day of contemplation and you know, self-searching? Clearly, you would come to the same conclusion that most all first fruits do, is that they are in a better state of manifestation of godly principles now than I was in my first year. As a matter of fact, I look back on my first years in the church in comparison and say I was all but foolish compared to now, because I as you go along, and it, what does it say here? You grow towards that absolute embodiment, which means you get better and better and better at manifestation. When all of you entered into doing your assiduity praying, I bet you it was hard. I bet you it was hard if it was for me. Because you had to remember to do that every morning. You had to get into this concept of putting everything into God's hands. You had to think about what this day was about, put that into God's hands. And then all through the day, as you encountered things that you had already thought about or new things that you were encountering, you had to put that into God's hands. So you're in contact with God all day. That was unthinkable. Unthinkable in my first. I wouldn't even, if you said assiduity praying, I would have not known what you were talking about. Even if you were talking to me about, are you putting everything into God's hands? At that time, I probably could have acknowledged that intellectually. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But to say, now, where am I in that continuum? Where am I? I'm at the beginning. I'm at the very beginning. And thank God that he blessed us a lot when we were yet newbies in the faith. And I think back to all those blessings that he gave me in those first years. And then I think back to how less embodiment that I am now, less embodiment then, more embodiment now. I'm better at manifesting. I'm better at just knee-jerk reaction into the law of God and to manifesting a principle of God. You're much better at it now. And where does he do that? He does it in something called time. He just doesn't zap us and make us experts in this. He says, Christians must grow towards that absolute embodiment of love, meaning all godly principles. Love is the fulfillment of law, and fulfillment of law brings the ultimate satisfaction. And so what I just described to you, you know, where you have been and where you are now, is there not satisfaction in that? We're not talking about self-satisfaction. We're talking about in the presence of God, in the throne room, best place to be satisfied. You are in a satisfaction of what God has done in and through you. You are in satisfaction. What did that one sentence of the doctrine say? That as we keep the law, there is satisfaction. Words to that, that there's satisfaction in that. The better we get at keeping the law, the more satisfied we are. And when it comes to fulfillment and success and prosperity and all those things, they get better at the same time. So all of this is working on a time continuum. And by the way, for the people that are newer to the faith in the room, It isn't about calendar time. It is about time, but it's not about calendar time like, oh, I have this many years on you. No, it isn't about that. And so we could never do a comparison one between the other. What, you've only been in 5 years? You know, no, because God can do, and I'm going to give you the proof of that. God could do in other words, every individual in the salvation process is in a unique situation. And God can accelerate or take one on a slower journey through that process. Now, how do we know that he could make really speed up that process? It's called the 144,000 and the great multitude. They are first fruits that don't even know they've been called yet. I'm sure God is working with them, but they have not been called. They have not been called to the body of Christ yet. Yet they are going to come in after the Great Tribulation, and then they're going to be first fruits? You think God's taking a chance there? No. So that is the proof that you need to say we can't compare among ourselves how long we've been in. As a matter of fact, the ones that have been in longer, one could say, yeah, it took a lot longer with you. And which is an interesting thing about death in the congregation. We've lost people to death, right? And a part of that has to do with the fact that if God is going to take the life of a first fruit, they're ready for the kingdom. So if you're still alive and others are dead, he's still working with you. They're confirmed to the kingdom. Now that isn't to say you're not confirmable to the kingdom, but God is keeping you alive. And since he chooses the day of your death, he is working a timeline with you, a very unique, absolute unique timeline with you. And we should take advantage of every day of that. And that's one of the things that the Day of Atonement brings us to, because it's a culmination. Clearly, by the time you and I get to the actual fulfillment of the Day of Atonement, we're spirit beings. Total satisfaction. So we're going to have satisfaction already in us, and we're going to have the satisfaction of seeing that day fulfilled and Satan put away for 1,000 years. Great satisfaction in that. And today, since we know that those two things are true, we're going to be spirit beings, and we're going to be there to witness as spirit beings the fulfillment of this day. There's great satisfaction in that. Back into the doctrine here, a person who is following God will produce good works, fulfillment of the law, as a natural consequence of his conversion and his possession of the Holy Spirit. These works are not an end in themselves. The ultimate goal of the kingdom, the ultimate goal is the kingdom and the family of God. Satisfaction, fulfillment, and gratification. Going to the meaning of the word satisfaction. This is from our doctrine on the Christian. We are required to lead a life of personal responsibility and character building before God and our fellow man. A life that is pleasing and obedient to our Creator, and one that enables the individual to find and reach its greatest personal potential and fulfillment. Again, satisfaction, fulfillment, and gratification. Let us finish with a few scriptures on fulfillment and satisfaction. Psalm 63. See, I had a natural reaction right now. Usually when, and you could probably watch me in future sermons, but when I give a verse for you to be turning to, that's usually when I'm reaching for some liquid. And just as I gave Psalm 63, 1 through 5, it's almost a Pavlov response. I'm looking for the liquid, and I don't have any. I usually have 7 containers of liquid here, different liquids. Psalm 63, beginning in verse 1, a psalm of David, when he was in the wilderness of Judah. O God, thou art my God, early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth after thee, my flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. Do you get the feeling of this scripture in your fast? Some of you have already texted me or written to me that you're thirsty. I'm thirsty! And I was liking that onto what sin is like. It's also what the world is like. We live in a thirsty land. Verse 2, to see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. It's real easy to see God. When you're doing your assiduity praying, that is, every day, putting everything into God's hands, you'll see God more often. You'll see God more often. As it says here in verse 2, to see thy power and thy glory. And then it says, so as I have seen in the sanctuary. Well, that is what you're doing every day. So this, when you're doing, putting everything into God's hands every day, this verse is yours. You get to see his power and glory on a regular basis. And how are you going to see it? Like when you do your assiduity praying tomorrow, assiduity is just a word that means focus, and you're focusing on putting everything into God's hands. When you do that tomorrow, and you see something, you see God's intervention somewhere, you're going to go, just like I've seen you before, God. And that's what it's saying here after the comma. So as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. I've seen you do this before. And people that are putting their total day into God's hands, day by day, they're seeing this to where it gets to be second nature. And it becomes a real easy thing to do. You take this, God. You do this. You know, I told you that I have trouble buttoning the top button of this shirt, especially this shirt. This isn't my regular fun shirt that I have a real easy buttoning. This one was hard. And when I try to do it, I can never do it. It's like the perfect example in my life of my way or God's way. Because I try it a few times, my arms get really tired, I get frustrated, and I say, okay, God, I need you on this one. And it goes in every time. Verse 3, because thy loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise thee. Absolutely. The more you see God, the more praise. What is God's favorite thing in the world? Praise from his children. Thus, verse 4, will I bless thee while I live. I will lift up my hands in thy name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness. My mouth shall praise thee with joyful lips. Psalm 65, verse 4. Blessed is the man whom thou choosest and causest to approach unto thee, that he may dwell in thy courts. We shall be satisfied with the goodness of thy house, even of thy holy temple. And guess what? We are that holy temple. So God has chosen you. So the first part of 65:4, Psalm 65:4, blessed is the man whom God chooses. Well, there's something to be satisfied about. God has chosen you. You know that he has. And causes you to approach onto thee. Well, if you're putting everything into God's hands on a regular basis, that'll do it. Why? That he may dwell in thy courts. Well, if you put everything into God's hands, you brought God in close. You're looking at him, for him, on a minute by minute and hour by hour presence. He says that I may dwell in thy, wherever God is, that's his court. We shall be satisfied with the goodness of thy house, all of that intervention, even of thy holy temple. Proverbs 19:23, the fear of the Lord tendeth to life, and he that hath it abide satisfied. I think I made up that word by myself. It's in the Bible. The fear of the Lord tendeth to life, and he that hath it shall abide satisfied. Hence the title of this sermon. He shall not be visited with evil. Hence my prayers to keep Satan away from all those preparing and getting ready for the feast and traveling to the feast and being at the feast. And I say that whether you are keeping the feast at home, it doesn't matter if you don't get to go to where God has placed his name. He's placed it where you're standing. So the ones that have to stay home, you're being blessed there. Everything that could possibly happen at a feast site is happening in your presence. So do not feel one iota bad for not being able to attend a feast site this year. I've been there. You think I've made every feast? No. Psalm 17:15. As for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. Well, that's interesting. That's when we do our assiduity praying, when we awake. From the commentary, and that's another thing you'll get used to. When you wake up in the morning and you put everything into God's hands, usually the way that works is you wake up, if you're like me, you're probably face down or you're laying on your side, and you wake up and you realize, okay, it's daytime, I got to get up. I'm already acknowledging God. Okay, another day. I'm putting this one into your hands too. Man, did I give you Psalm 17:15? As for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awaken in thy likeness. From the commentary, with thy likeness. Or in thy likeness, that is, resembling thee. The resemblance doubtless is in the moral character, for the high hope of a good man is that he may be and will be like God. That's what I was, commentary is getting what I was trying to say before. And when you are living a life where you're putting everything into God's hands, you're in that proximity to God all of the time. Clearly, and I can't speak for you, but I can speak for myself, God was the sometimes presence when I was first in the church. I mean, I was just learning about God. I didn't understand this concept of God being there always, you know, other than maybe acknowledging that intellectually. But to know it, to feel it, and by know it, I mean way beyond intellectual understanding. I'm talking about a spiritual understanding. And that spirit is rising up in you, and it's affecting your mental, emotional, physical, as well as your spiritual. These things are all dovetailed together. So it says, with thy likeness, I will be, when I awake with thy likeness, Psalm 17:15. When I awake with thy likeness, and then the meaning of that is, in thy likeness, that is, resembling thee. So if you're waking up in the morning and the first thought you have in your mind is putting this day into God's hands, that's a resemblance, doubtless, as it says here, in the moral character of Jesus Christ. For the highest hope of a good man is that he may be and will be like God. And how is that going to happen? How is that hope fulfilled on a daily basis in the physical here and now? I mean, when you turn to a spirit being, that'll be the ultimate fulfillment of that. But it says here, for the highest hope of a good man is that he may be and will be like God. If God is with you 24/7 and you're realizing that now and you're putting every little aspect as you encounter it into God's hands, you are coming to the full understanding of what this commentary is trying to say about Psalm 17:15. With thy likeness. Your whole life becomes with his likeness. Today is the day of atonement. Atonement means satisfaction. It will bring satisfaction. God is bringing reconciliation at one mint. And we are to be at one with God. Therefore, rejoice and be satisfied on this day of atonement.